IOX is supported by Freshtown Marketplace in the heart of Margaretville. Open till 9, Monday through Saturday, Sunday till 8, with everything you'd expect in a supermarket, including local and organic foods, gourmet coffees, micro-brew beers and ales, and online shopping. Learn more about online shopping at foodtown.com/shopping. WIOX is supported by Roxbury Wine and Spirits on Main Street in Roxbury. Open every day except Sunday from 12 noon to 6 p.m. for contactless curbside pickup or delivery to your open vehicle trunk or hatchback. Selection of wines listed at RoxburyWinesAndSpirits.com. Orders by phone or email 607-326-6200 or Jeff at RoxburyWinesAndSpirits.com. WIOX is supported by Kimchi Harvest at East Branch Farms on Route 30 at Briggs Road in Roxbury. Experienced growers of organic vegetables and herbs, selling authentic homemade Korean kimchi and banchans. East Branch Farms. Information and ordering for pickup at 607-326-6177 or eastbranchfarms.com.
Hi, this is Alan Reynolds, host of Pure Country, Saturday afternoons from 4 to 6, and the Pure Country Radio Truck Stop Sunday nights from 10 till midnight on WIOX Roxbury. Serving New York's Catskills region at 91.3 FM. WIOXradio.org and MTC Cable Channel 20.
She walks through the corn leading down to the river. Her hair shone like gold in the hot morning sun. She took all the love that a poor boy could give her and left me to die like a fox on the run. Like a fox,
like a fox,
like a fox on the run. Now everybody knows the reason for my fall. A woman tempted me down in Paradise Hall. This woman tempted me and she took me for a ride. Like a lonely fox, boys, I need a place to hide. She walked through the corn leading down to the river. Her hair shone like gold in the hot morning sun. She took all the love that a poor boy could give her and left me to die like a fox on the run. Like a fox,
like a fox,
like a fox on the run. Glass of wine, boys, to fortify our soul. We'll talk about the world and the friends we used to know. I see a string of girls who have put me on the floor. The game is nearly over and the hounds are at the door. She walked through the corn leading down to the river. Her hair shone like gold in the hot morning sun. Oh, she took all the love that a poor boy could give her. Left me to die like a fox on the run. Like a fox,
like a fox,
like a fox on the run.
Okay. You are listening to WIOX Community Radio, live and local in the Catskill Mountains at 91.3 FM and MTC Cable Channel 20, and everywhere at WIOXradio.org. Where it's easy to donate if you like what you hear. You can also get WIOX on any smart device through the radio.fm app. This is From the Forest every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Talk about a different forest-related topic with Ryan and John. John, how's it going?
Things are good. How are you?
I'm good. You know?
What's new? What's new in the woods?
It's new in the woods. Got out a little bit, did some hunting, and the deer have been acting like early October until last night. Saw some bucks chasing the girls.
All right.
Yeah, they're really chasing away, and that's always fun, you know. These things, they happen right behind people's homes, you know. 300 yards away or 300 feet away from people's houses, and you know what? You could be that close from a road, and you're in your own little world watching all that going on. It's pretty neat.
Yeah, yeah. Well, some people don't even ever get to see that going on.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
I got to snuck up on a bobcat. That's the first.
Oh, yeah? Yeah. How the hell did you do that?
I guess I was quieter and more stealthy than the bobcat.
Oh, come on.
Put myself on a pedestal.
Jesus, yeah.
I guess. I don't know. It was that day, this weekend when we had some snow. I don't know. I guess it was Sunday, maybe.
Yeah.
I was walking up a log road, and the snow was starting to get soft, and it was very windy, so
yeah.
I was quiet walking, and I just took my time. I didn't have far to go to get where I wanted, and I just took a lot of time to get there, thinking I could walk up on something, and I did. I walked up on a deer. It didn't see me till I was like 30 yards away, spike horn, and the deer ran off. I got another 100 yards down that same log road, and I go around a little corner, and there's a bobcat in the road.
Crazy.
It saw me and it ran, but it was fun.
Yeah, log roads are nice sometimes. You can be real quiet on them, you know?
Yeah. There's usually not a lot of sticks or anything to break, so as long as the leaves aren't crunchy, you can make your way pretty quiet.
Yeah, the sticks are terrible. You snap one twig, you know?
Yeah,
even deer can be loud, man. You sit in your tree stand, and I don't hear them snap twigs too often. But rocks... going over stone walls.
Yeah, I've heard that.
I've heard that many times. And water. Streams. Ka-donk. I'll hear them go through the water of a stream many times.
Splish splash. Huh?
Oh, yeah. You know? So, I don't know. Other than that, been doing some tree work, cutting down some trees. I went to a training last week, which is why I wasn't on the air. I was over in New England and learning about tree climbing, which is always fun.
Cool. Any new techniques?
Well, aside from tree climbing, yes. But aside from tree climbing, these crazy guys over there, these arborists, they all soup up their chainsaws. I had no idea. I've heard of people doing some modifications, but all of them do it. You know, they bore out the cylinder or the piston or whatever. And, cylinder?
They bore out the cylinder to fit a bigger piston.
No, I don't know what I'm saying. Yeah. So, I mean, and they do sound pretty cool, but I don't know.
Nice.
Yeah, they send them out to some guy over in Ohio or something and
The last training I did in September, I met a guy, same thing, he was showing me his saw. It was pretty neat. He almost ripped his shoulder off trying to get it started though. I wouldn't want to muscle that thing every day, but clearly it had a high compression.
Yeah.
But it sounded cool and it cut wood great, but I don't know, my saw cut just fine.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's worth the expense, but I guess you'd have to run one and compare, I guess.
I like my saws. I like my little arsenal of saws. I'm happy with it.
Yeah.
And I learned some few new techniques. Knots. Went over knots again. It's always good to know, you know. No other way to learn them other than repetition for me. Some people, I guess they can look at a knot and they just know it. But...
I don't know. Looking at those diagrams in a book, I could never figure out a knot.
No. No. But, so I'd say there's a few knots more that I learned, and always good to know. Gadgets, a lot of people are using gadgets. These younger guys, they are all into the gadgets, man. They got foot ascenders, knee ascenders to get up in the tree.
Yeah?
So,
You think you'll join the Young Bucks one day?
I bought a foot ascender. It's in the mail.
Okay.
Yeah. No, I bought a foot ascender. I'm not going to the mechanical ascenders. I'm not going to the single rope technique. I'm going to stick with the double because I like it. It's more comfortable in the tree. They both have their advantages and disadvantages, and he went over some ways to use the double even better. But, the way I was doing it was hip thrusting, and that's considered old school now. Christ's sake.
I can imagine. I mean, just watching you get up in a tree looks very laborious.
Laborious, but I feel like, you get those muscles, though.
Yeah, right.
And I noticed a lot of the younger guys, they don't have it. They've relied upon those ascenders so much that you can tell they're not as comfortable in the tree.
Hmm.
You know? So there's always a price to something. I feel like there's something you build to. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, right.
Like, I would want to, especially if I was in my early 20s, I would definitely want to build up that balance and that core muscles and stuff before going to mechanical devices. That's just my thinking. I'm not saying it's right or wrong. That's just my thinking.
Yeah, I could see that. I mean, put it this way, too. I mean, what if something happened to that mechanical device and you couldn't use it? So what, is that guy done working for the day?
They're pretty good, though.
Just saying.
But, yeah, true.
At least now you know how to continue working.
Yeah. you know, I just don't like that much stuff on my harness and stuff. You know, when you're walking around, all that stuff on there, you know how it is. Twigs get in the way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and here's the other thing, for smaller guys especially. I get cold. I'm not, you know, hey, I get colder in winter, okay? I'm not like one of these big guys where, you know, they have a T-shirt on, it's 20 degrees out, and they're sweating. You put that chest harness on and all that stuff, and it cinches on your clothing. What does it do?
You lose your airspace.
It loses the airspace. You get cold. It's the same thing with deer hunting, right?
Yeah, you want to be puffy.
Right. When you're bow hunting, you have your harness on in the tree. And when that cinches on my jacket, I can feel it. I'm like, damn, I just lost a little insulation.
Yeah. I wear it a layer down, though. Do you? You don't?
What?
My harness. It's one layer below my final layer.
No, I wear it on the outside.
And then I just bring the safety strap up out of the last jacket. Then I could throw a jacket over top.
If you saw my harness, you would laugh.
Is it an old school one?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
It's really old.
Well, so some of these new ones, it's worth looking into. They've come a long way, and you can put them underneath clothing and be very comfortable.
Yeah.
And not lose any you know, safety value to it, and you can keep your puffy.
You're probably right. You know what? You just made me think. Maybe I should use my Cabela's points next year for that.
At least look into it. Consider it.
It's free. Man, just using that credit card.
Right. There you go.
As long as you pay it off. Anyway, tonight we are talking about venison from the forest to table. So John's a venison connoisseur. And we're going to talk about, you know, what happens when the deer goes down.
Okay.
And yeah. So it is deer hunting season right now. We're in the midst of the archery season, which entails two implements of destruction, which is the compound bow. Oh, three. If you're a purist, John, the recurve.
Right.
And three, the crossbow opens up November 1st, which I don't have. I don't have that.
November 1st? Or is it open then?
Hell yeah.
Oh, okay.
I'm pretty sure.
See, I don't pay attention to it because I use my compound. So.
Yeah, nothing against crossbow, by the way. I just already spent money on a compound a long time ago, and there's no reason to have two things to maintain.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Two sets of arrows.
Bolts,
yeah. You got to call them something different. Different broadheads, all these things. So then you got to just reinvest it all over.
I don't need to do that.
Well, I was lucky enough to score. I shot a doe, so I've been through this venison process.
Nice. Awesome.
Yeah.
And? No.
Success. I don't know. It's all...
So, okay. When the deer was down, there's a few things that go through a hunter's brain, right? One, first of all, you're going to gut it right away.
Right.
You know? I mean, that's obvious.
Yep.
Then what? Temperature, did you hang it? How long? Did you take the hide off? Did you leave it on?
Well, actually, the first thing that happened, this happens in bow. It's more common than you think, but the deer was rather alert, which I try not to take this shot when the deer is completely alert because it can see you and it, you know, it can move. They call it jumping the string.
Yeah.
Bow hunters talk about it all the time. Well, she jumped. She didn't jump the string completely. Actually, presented herself with an even better shot the way she moved.
We know this for a fact now because of YouTube.
Yeah, you go slow motion video.
Yeah.
So it's just like a sprinter. You know, they get down in a stance and try to sprint away. They lower themselves and they try to turn, right? So
just think how amazing that is, John, that they can jump the string.
It truly is amazing. Yeah. Well, this deer did that, and actually, like I said, when she turned, she opened herself up with a better shot opportunity as far as hitting vitals. But it turned into a quartering away shot as well, and that caused the arrow to just nick a tiny quarter of the stomach as it passed through.
Gotcha.
So it was a great shot. You know, deer died very quickly. It was great. But when I gutted it, now we have that to deal with.
Gotcha.
So we have stomach material that could cause some meat contamination.
Right.
So, like Catskill Mountains, there's a lot of streams around. She died within 100 feet of a stream, and after I gutted her, that's the first thing I did. I cleaned it.
Nice.
Yep, I had water, and I cleaned out everything. So that there's two cuts inside of the chest cavity.
Yeah.
Those are your tenderloins.
And?
And that's the best two cuts.
You think so?
Arguably, a lot of people say those are the two most tender cuts of the whole deer. And you don't, even if you don't think it's the best one, it's top three, right?
Oh, yeah. No, you know what it is? I think it's the taste that's kind of like you have to get used to that. I like it, but it's it's not my favorite tasting.
I mean, it is on the inner side, so I wonder how much that is just in preparation, and maybe people aren't keeping it clean enough.
No, I feel like it. I know what you're saying, but I feel like it's very irony.
Oh yeah, no,
it's
I get
extremely irony.
Okay, I see that. Definitely see that.
Yeah.
Anyway, so stomach contact on those two cuts. Had to clean them right away. Saved them. I mean, if you don't do that, forget it.
Yeah. But that makes sense. Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, these are the things that people argue about, and it's interesting. Some people leave the hide on. Some people take it off, and some people hang it head up. Some people hang the deer head down.
What are you?
I'm a head down.
I'm a head down all the way. Yeah. I've had arguments over this. I don't know why. I don't know if it makes any difference. I don't really care.
So what's the argument for head up?
It looks so silly, I think.
Does it look silly? You put your nose up when you see that. You're like, that guy.
Yeah, it's like, what are you doing? I don't know.
I don't know.
You know, I've seen it with more farmers, and I think this is my theory why. If you, like pigs, for example. I knew a farmer, he butchered his own pigs.
Yeah.
And, you know, he'd do it right in the barn. And then how do you gut him in the barn?
Yeah.
He hung it up by the tractor. So instead of, like, dragging it out and, you know, you can hang it up by the tractor and then by head up on a pig, everything falls down when you gut it.
Right.
So it's up elevated. I think that's where it comes from.
It makes sense.
Yep. Yeah. Because that same farmer always hung his deer head up as well.
Yeah. So, I mean, taste, you know, we'll get into the taste of the venison and everything. I mean, obviously different areas are probably going to have different tasting venison, but, you know, I really don't know. You would think, you know, the younger the forest might be a healthier, heavier. First of all, the deer are going to be healthier, more numerous, and heavier if there's younger, better forest quality habitat, right? I mean, I'll imagine.
Yeah, any food. So you see a prime example is out in agricultural lands.
Yeah.
In the Midwest, even western New York.
Yeah.
The deer just get bigger, and that's because of available food source.
Kansas, Iowa, just bigger deer.
Right.
Same species of white-tailed deer.
Yep, exactly. You know?
And they're just getting bigger because quality habitat. I have noticed the deer where I live are small, anecdotally speaking, because it's very mature forest and not much to eat. We're talking about doe sizes, right?
Yep.
I mean,
yeah, the biggest buck and the biggest doe that I've heard of in New York State from my core group of friends in a long time both came out of western New York this year.
Yeah.
And we talked about the weights. One was 211 pounds, the buck, and the doe was 132. And you hear of deer that big from friends that we've talked to. Oh, yeah, they always used to be that big. I tell you what, you'd be hard-pressed finding deer that big in the Catskills.
Yes, absolutely.
I mean, I've shot a lot of deer myself, and between me and my friend group and my family group, we've taken a lot of deer, and none have ever come that close.
That goes for antlers, too, I would imagine. You know, the biggest bucks, antler-wise, western New York usually, the Midwest, takes energy to create antlers as it does, you know, weights.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
You see the same thing with fawns, too, fawn recruitment. Does will have more fawns and healthier and bigger fawns when there's a greater food source.
Yeah. Yeah, when I grew up in New Paltz, Ulster County, the deer population peaked in the 90s. It was not uncommon to see three fawns with a mother.
Hmm.
Now, much less common.
I was going to say.
In fact, I can't remember the last time I saw three.
I was going to say the same thing. It's been more than 5 years
right,
since I've seen that.
Usually one, two sometimes.
Yep. You know? Or zero is pretty common.
Yeah, zero.
Yep. The doe I shot, she was completely dry.
Yeah.
No evidence of a fawn that she had at all this year. Now, that could be a lot of things. It could be, you know, she never got bred. She lost her fawn to predation, bear, whatever. Or just wasn't healthy enough to produce a fawn. I don't know. This going into this winter. Who knows?
Could be. Although this winter is kind of easy.
Yeah. So it's probably unlikely. But
yeah, you have the episodic hemorrhagic disease going on. Yeah, a lot of deer are dying over, especially in the Walk Hill Valley, the Hudson Valley. But once the frost comes, just to put that out there, the midge, which is the way it spreads, or gnats or whatever, it dies, I guess. So if you had a frost, you're probably good. Maybe we'll talk about that later. But let's get into the taste. So before the kill, what makes a deer taste good, John? I mean, like, what are some things?
From what I know or what I think I know?
You know what? What do you think you
I'm going to go anecdotal.
We can go online.
I haven't researched the science on this a lot. And I think, just camp talk or just, you know, whatever you want to call it, barroom talk, camp talk, just people talking. There's a lot of different rumors out there.
Yeah.
I think the number one thing is how long you age the meat. I think that's above and beyond. Obviously, cleanliness is top three. Not handling the meat appropriately. Don't let the meat spoil, obviously, is a huge thing. But assuming you've done a clean job, and the meat stayed cool, I think aging is number one.
Interesting.
What is your belief?
I think aging increases the texture of the meat. I don't know about taste. I'm not sure. I'm not sure. Charles Aschheimer, I got this information years ago from. He's a writer and photographer for Deer and Deer Hunting magazine. This is what he said it boiled down to. Was three things. Age, how far the deer ran before dying, and curing, which is what you're talking about. So we could weigh them equally. Or you're saying curing is more, and it could be. I'm going to say age has a lot to do with it, too, though.
Oh, yeah. No, yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
For sure. I can tell you the youngest deer I ever ate was the most tender deer I ever ate.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. The worst deer I ever ate was the oldest deer I ever got. I think there's a happy medium as far as you shoot a small deer, it's just as much work, but for less meat. It's not just as much, but it's still quite a bit of work. Whereas, you know, a 2.5-year-old buck to me is the best. For me, anecdotally speaking, 2.5 has a lot of meat. It's still young.
Yep.
And to me, that's what I go for. I get excited when I see a 2.5-year-old buck. I start seeing, I see a big buck. I still get excited, John, okay?
Yeah.
But, you know, there's a side of me that's like, we'll see. But, yeah, nice, healthy, like, linebacker-looking 2.5-year-old, you know? That's a good buck. That was one of the best bucks I ever got. But, so let's see here. How far it ran. What do you think?
I wrote in my notes on my page here, I don't buy it.
You don't buy it?
I don't buy it. I mean, I guess stress could have a lot to do with it. You hear of, especially when you do any research into commercial meat packing and things like that, you know, stress always comes up. I think that has something to do with it. But, like, if you're measuring physical distance of running, I don't know. I just don't.
Are you saying they're not stressed out while they're running away?
Well, put it this way. All right, so the worst deer I ever had, and it wasn't taste, it was toughness. Just couldn't actually chew it.
Right.
A very unfortunate deer. It had been shot by two other hunters, not me, over multiple days.
Jesus.
Before I got on its track, and that was the end of that. It never ran because I tracked it. It never ran. I tracked it in snow, and I walked up on it and shot it. So physical running distance and movement, it didn't actually go that far from where the previous two hunters had shot it as far as distance goes.
And
I shot it, clean kill, and done, over with. But I just think the stress of being shot for more than 24 hours by these other hunters first.
Well, yeah, but I think you're saying the same thing. I think you agree with the guy, not even knowing it. I think he's talking about the same thing.
I think he's talking about, and what I see in the research notes is that it's a buildup of lactic acid from running. This deer was laying down calm, and it had been 24 hours since it had been shot. I don't think it didn't run. I don't buy the lactic acid thing, I guess.
Okay, so maybe not the lactic acid, but couldn't we say that maybe they're both right? Like, it is stressed because it is running.
I think stress is a big thing.
Whatever that stress is. I'm not a deer psychologist.
Yeah.
So I don't know what's going on.
Right.
But I would imagine that they do know what's going on as far as they're being pursued. They're not feeling so well, and this is a bad thing. It's bad for the hunter. It's obviously bad for the deer. Hunters don't like chasing deer either. But, yeah, I agree. I chased a deer once, and it was terrible. I don't think it tasted as good, but I don't remember, to be fair. So, how far it ran. Yeah, go ahead.
And that's got to be this is why it continues just to be like, you know, barroom banter kind of talk or camp talk, because how do you do a study on that?
Well, I mean,
it's unethical to do it, right?
It is unethical. We can use commercial, though, beef farmers. We know that slaughterhouses, as far as I've heard from people who work in slaughterhouses and stuff or visit them, is that the animals are calm before they slaughter them.
It's true.
So I don't know. There could be a reason for them doing that. There could be no reason. I don't know. And we're not going to, you know, stress out the cattle and then eat hamburgers or steaks afterwards to find out, like you're saying.
Right, right.
So according to Charles Alsheimer, this is what he claims. Supposedly when a deer runs for a while after wounding it, it expends glycogen reserves, John. But I don't know. pH level of the meat increases, speeding bacterial growth. John Stransky from the U.S. Forest Service says wounding or simply the threat of danger, which could be stress, is what you're saying. So he it sounds like he's in agreement. Accelerates the animal's heartbeat and constricts visceral blood vessels. So it floods the deer's muscles with blood and a buildup of lactic acid and pyruvic acid. I have no idea what pyruvic acid is, so both metabolic waste products fills up in the meat and causes gaminess.
Yeah, so what is this gaminess?
Gaminess.
How do you define that?
You can't. You can't. That's like when a planning board talks about rural charm.
Right. How do you define that?
You can't. That's a feeling. That's a yeah, I don't know. Gaminess. Some people have their mind made up before they ever taste that venison that it's going to be gamey.
Yeah, and definitely I think that's part of it,
you know.
Placebo thing.
So, the taste of the deer depends upon what happened in the seconds, minutes, etc. leading up to the animal's death. According to Alsheimer, this also determines how the animal should be cured. Okay. All right, so once the deer is down, we'll get into the curing. You got to gut it right away. I think people know that. You know, I did know one hunter. He dragged the deer out, so excited, big buck, forgot to gut it.
That was just so much extra work for him.
Man, I know. I would have noticed.
He jog around an extra 40-plus pounds.
I know, damn. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to From the Forest every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Talk about a different forest-related topic with Ryan and John. Tonight's topic is venison from the forest to the table. So the deer's down. Hopefully it didn't run too far. Usually they don't if you made a good shot. You gut the animal, and this is to reduce bacterial growth. If you made a gut shot, you should, Alsheimer agrees with you, you should rinse it out with cold water and pat dry. Why pat dry? Probably so that bacteria, because it grows in moisture, it can't manifest itself.
Yep. Yeah, that's what I've heard all my life. Don't get the meat wet.
John, embrace what do you call? Vinegar. I'll take a vinegar wipe if I think that, you know, even after I pat it dry sometimes, and wipe out the cavity or around the tenderloins.
I have to try that, because you told me that this week, and I've never crossed my mind.
Yeah, it's a great product.
Cool.
You know?
It's cheap.
White vinegar. Cheap, lasts a long time, and it is edible. And it doesn't, you know, then just wipe off the vinegar if you think, you know, it's going to leave residue. It doesn't, but whatever. So, curing, or hanging the deer. This is very debatable. This is where no one really agrees that much.
Yep. The conversation diverges fast here.
Yeah, I mean, it depends upon how warm it's going to be, and that air temperature is such a local phenomenon, right? Everywhere is different, depending on where you are. Depends what structure you have. I don't know what you got. You have basement? Do you have shed? Does it have a concrete floor? That probably matters.
Right.
I don't know.
It definitely does. I know a guy. He hung up a deer in a very cold barn. It froze, like, over the next day or two because he wanted to age it, and he could not, and I mean could not, take care of that deer for weeks because it just would not thaw. Now, he could have taken it to a heated garage or something else, thaw it, but he just didn't.
Yeah.
So it hung there for weeks, 2 weeks or more. As far as I know, that deer was fine.
Yeah.
I don't see why it wouldn't be. It'd be fine in your freezer for 2 weeks, and you thaw it out and eat it, it'd be fine. My garage, concrete floor, stays cool until a sunny day.
Right.
It's got tin walls, and it's just like a little greenhouse, I guess. as soon as the sun bakes on that tin, you could set your hand on the tin.
Like your car.
And it feels hot. Exactly, like your car.
Yeah.
So, yeah, a day like today, I wouldn't want a deer hanging.
So, okay. Rigor mortis, what do you want to say about that?
I listened to a talk. It was a podcast. And it was a group of hunters talking to a meat scientist. And I really should have looked up his name so we can. But anyway, it doesn't really matter. But what he talked about was the worst thing you can do is begin cutting it up until rigor mortis has done.
And rigor mortis is?
Rigor mortis is the, I don't know the exact definition, but it's when the muscles become stiff and they contract themselves soon after the animal dies. And it's usually 24 to 48 hours before they uncontract themselves.
You want to let that pass.
And he says you need to let that pass while the muscles are still on the bone, on the tendons, so that they retract back to their original state. He said if you cut up the meat, so he was mostly talking to these guys were Western hunters, and they have to pack out all of their meat because they're up in the mountains. They're reducing weight to get back out of the mountains, mostly elk hunters. And these guys were just basically saying, well, we have no other way to do it, so this is how.
But they could hang the quarters.
Well, they don't. They debone everything in the field, leave bones.
Wow. Everything.
So that's how. Well, these, I don't know. These guys were like backcountry guys. They were going in many miles. And any bit of weight off your back helps.
Yeah, sure.
So they take the time to just bone everything out.
Have you ever thought about quartering up a deer if you're 3 miles back in the Catskills?
I have, actually.
Yeah.
I was thinking, just for something different. One day, life bucket list goal is to just have a situation where I have to do that. I want to pack out a deer in the Catskill Mountains.
I know. Yeah, me too.
That'd be cool.
I think I wouldn't drag it. If it's more than 2 miles back, you know, in difficult terrain, I don't. First of all, I want that hide. I really do, because that I want to make it into leather and see what that animal. Once you take the hair off and convert it to leather, you can see what the animal is doing a lot more.
Yeah.
And fighting and everything, all that comes out. You can see where bucks were fighting with it by the neck, ticks, tick bites, all that stuff.
I have a spot I hunt that the road is higher in elevation than where the deer are. So where you park, you hike down in.
Oh, man.
So it would be like 200 feet of elevation gain to get back up. Now, obviously, there's roads down below, but the public access is up high. So there's no public access low. So you'd have to either get permission to drag it through someone's private property, which I think people do if they hunt there. But I think that would be my situation where I would pack it out.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so.
But I guess that would be the thing, is to leave it on the quarters if you can, so it's still attached to the tendons. And
yeah, and then you could hang it. Like a book I read, he hangs it off of, you know, using a nail or a hook.
Yep.
And hang it quarterly, and then literally, and then put it into your chest freezer or cooler. Yeah.
Yeah. I have a friend, or my wife's friend rather. He was given an old cooler that someone was throwing away, a refrigerator. So he just took all the shelving out, and that's what's in his garage.
Yeah.
Every deer he gets, he quarters it, and there's meat hooks in the fridge. He hangs it, and he swears by 14 days.
Yeah, I buy that.
So 14 days in the fridge at 34 degrees, and he doesn't even think about cutting it up until 2 weeks.
Yeah, I would like to do that. I think that's the way to go, because now you're free to go hunt and do other things.
Yep, and you don't have to worry about the weather.
Absolutely. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to From the Forest. Tonight's topic is venison from the forest to the table.
I ain't got nobody hanging around my doorstep. Ain't got no loose chain, just a hanging around my jeans. If you see somebody, would you send them over my way? I could use some help here with a can of pork and beans. I once had a family, but they up and left me with nothing but an 8-track, another side of George Jones. I was in high cotton, just a banging on my 6-string, a kicking at the trash can, walking skin and bone.
I can see your back porch if I close my eyes now. I can hear the train tracks, the laundry on the line. I'm thinking it's your business, but you don't got the answer. I'm knocking on your screen door in the summertime. Driving on the trees now, swinging in the breeze now, hanging on the vine, dreaming about a sailboat. I don't need a fur coat underneath the dashboard. Got some sweet potato wine. I can see your back porch if I close my eyes now. I can hear the train track through the laundry on the line. It's your business, but you don't got the answer. I'm knocking on your screen door in the summertime. I'm knocking on your screen door in the summertime.
All right. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to From the Forest every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Talk about a different forest-related topic. Tonight's topic is venison. From the forest to the table. So, we've been talking about hanging deer. What if it gets up in the 50s, 40s, 50s, 60s during the day?
Cool.
Yeah. What are you going to do for hanging? How long?
So, my wife and I, we swear on 9 days or more. We've been, in the last 2 years, we've been going 9 days, I think all but maybe one or two deer. And we get that because you don't have nine good days in bow season. Just forget it. Look at the long-term forecast. It's not going to happen.
Right.
It's going to get warm. So hang it as long as you can. Hopefully that's at least 2 or 3 days. Get the rigor mortis out of it. And then...
Hang it for what? 2 or 3 days?
If you can.
Yeah.
Minimum. That's what we try for. And then we skin it and we quarter it. And we have a cooler that can fit... It's big enough that fits an entire deer quartered.
Yeah.
We're not deboning anything yet.
Right.
So what we do is each individual quarter goes into a kitchen-sized garbage bag, unscented. Make sure you get unscented.
Right.
There's so many out there that have lemon scent or whatever that's going to taint the meat. But they go in a garbage bag because now the meat's already cool. I've heard people, you know, discuss you shouldn't put any plastic-type products around your venison. But I think – I don't know. I don't know the reason for that, but I think that's because people's fear of trapping heat in.
Yeah.
And if the meat's already hung for 2 or 3 days, it's already cool.
If you were packing out a deer, how would you do it then? You'd have to put it in plastic.
I bought – actually, there's meat bags that these Western hunters use. It's very cheap to buy them. I think it was like $10 for a pack of four.
I gotta go buy some.
And the idea is they're a mesh bag, but they're absorbent. So they prevent any – if there's any blood or anything, it won't seep through into your pack.
Yeah,
but because it's a mesh, it's a fine mesh, it'll allow air to escape and heat to escape.
Nice.
Yeah, so they pack down into a little tiny, maybe a travel-sized first aid kit-sized bag, small little thing, and it weighs ounces.
I have to go buy
some.
So
it doesn't add much to your pack.
Yeah, all right. I've heard of those, but never bought them.
Well, yeah, look, there's many different brands and sizes because mostly Western hunters use them, so make sure you get you don't get elk sized ones.
So I got one of those coolers. They work great. You know, you put them on an incline so that the ice drains away the water.
Oh yeah, so now that they're individually packaged, so to speak, they're in that garbage bag. This is why it's important, because the ice is going to melt. And again, like we said in the beginning, I don't want any water on the meat.
Right.
Bacteria growth is what
or a humid chamber.
Right, or it's going to be a high humidity inside that. That area, right. It's not like a refrigerator that's going to be dehumidifying all day long.
Right.
Like Ryan just said, you open up the drain at the bottom, put it on a slight incline, and anything can drain out, and that's it. As long as you keep adding ice, because you're going to lose ice faster that way because you got it open at the bottom, so it's not going to be lose some of its insulated value.
It lasts quite a while.
It does. You'll get two days out of a bag of ice.
Yeah, but I mean, I put 6 bags of ice in my cooler, and that's, I mean... It'll be 3 weeks later, it's still ice.
Yeah. Yeah, a good cooler.
Yeah.
It definitely should be.
Yeah.
Yep. And
it gets cool at night. I mean, it's getting down to the 40s at the warm, at the, you know, usually.
At the warmest, right.
Yeah.
And then from there, you can let it sit like that for, we've gone 9 days. Julia's friend goes 14.
Yeah.
So I buy it. I don't know how long you can push it, but why would you, I don't know, in my opinion, why would you want to go any longer than that if 9 to 14 works fine?
Right.
I bet 6 days probably works fine.
Probably.
But this is, it's a convenience thing too. You know why?
Yeah.
Because now you don't have to do the whole thing in one night.
Well, that's just it.
I get home from work. Actually, I'm going to do one tonight when I get back from this radio show. And that's all I'm doing is one.
Yeah, one quarter.
And I'll be done by the time I want to go to bed, cleaned up, and it's packaged and done. And then tomorrow, I'll maybe do two.
Yeah, when you get to the last leg, that actually, that term has a meaning.
They have the last leg, right?
On the last leg. It's true. But, yeah, about 60% of the meat is in the two hindquarters or legs. 60% of the deer.
And typically, I do those last.
Yep, me too, yeah. Yeah, you should do the most tender cuts first, is what, from what I do. Most tender should be done first.
Yep, or the way I see it, I do whatever I'm going to grind first. Any hamburger meat, because that doesn't matter how tough it is, because it goes through a grinder.
Sure.
So any sausage cuts, all that. For us, we grind most of the front shoulders and all of the neck meat.
You get rid of all the fat?
Oh, yeah. That's important.
Yeah.
I think.
Even with burger, as much as you can.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep, we do.
Yep. It's tough. But.
And nothing goes to waste. I don't know. There's a little secret. I don't know. Someone thought this was interesting when I told them the other day. We even, when we're done grinding everything, and you know how you have like 5 pounds or maybe 3 pounds of like scrap that you've trimmed off. You could have the silver skin and some fat content, all that stuff that we grind that. And we feed it to the chickens.
Yeah.
Nothing goes to waste.
Yeah, they eat it.
They eat it up. And actually, we'll freeze it. We'll freeze it. And then midwinter, you know, your chickens ever start pecking each other's feathers out like February?
I don't know. I feed them layer pellets. I don't know if you, do you feed your chickens layer pellets?
Layer crumbles. We had a problem with pellets once of crop compactions. Now we just get the crumbles.
Yeah, there's a lot of nutrients in those.
Well, I don't know. Maybe it wasn't feeding enough, but last winter we definitely had a problem with the chickens were pecking each other's feathers out and eating their feathers. We researched it, and it was a protein deficiency. So this is what we do. We save it until midwinter when they're not, the snow might be getting covered and they can't go find any insects or anything with protein anymore. So we just give them that. They love it.
That makes sense.
Nothing goes to waste.
So there was a study done. And it was a debate between beef and venison. And, you know, both these meat things are pretty good. I mean, I like beef. I like venison. But Outdoor Life did, in Field and Stream, did a study and between beef and deer. I thought this was kind of cool. So beef is preferred by most people, right? But first of all, let's do a little background. So beef has been taking a beating the past few years. Prices have soared. Quite a bit. Beef has gone up in price more so than it used to be, I feel like. Maybe it's gone down now. I have no idea. What do you know, John?
I don't know. I haven't purchased beef steak in a long time.
So, you know, people like venison for, well, taste reasons, but also they feel like it might be healthier. Who knows? No hormones or fat, although some people feel that having fat in the diet is actually a good thing. That's reversed, right? There's all sorts of debate on fat anymore.
Yeah.
Nutrition, beef, 3-ounce steak, it's about 247 calories, 15 grams from fat, 23 grams of protein, 76 grams of cholesterol. Deer, 3-ounce steak, 134 calories, 26 grams of protein, 95 grams of cholesterol, so there's more cholesterol, but less fat. Even a well-fed buck in corn country has significantly less fat than a steer. Yeah, it's just totally different fat.
Yeah.
It's more on the outside. It doesn't marble or anything like that.
No, venison does not marble.
So, let's see here. So, nutrition winner, they gave it to venison. I don't know. I mean, some people think saturated fat's not bad. Some people say it's the worst thing ever. It leads to heart disease. I don't know. Nutritionists are all over the place these days on fat, you know. Butter used to be terrible. Now it's great. Who knows, John?
I don't know. You hear maybe it's another fad, but people talk about the meat diets now, 100% meat.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know.
It was a keto diet. It seems like Atkins
I don't think it was strictly keto, because there was a fat component to it. I think ketosis, right? Isn't that when you have no fat in your diet?
Yeah, something like that.
And you just start feeding off protein and your body starts eating its own fat. Something Jesus. Like that. I don't know. Sounds terrible.
I don't know. I need some diversity of food, you know, because I'm like an omnivore.
I don't know. I eat a lot
I'm not
of
a cat.
I eat a lot of venison. It just makes me feel like I can splurge in other areas a little bit.
I feel like the only animal out there that's true carnivore is a cat. You know of another one? It's like mammal that's a true carnivore. Bears aren't. They're omnivores. Humans, definitely omnivores.
I don't know. Weasel family?
Even deer are omnivores. Deer have been seen eating animals, small ones.
Baby birds,
John. Baby birds.
I've heard that.
So, all right. So let's move on. the taste. Let's get to the taste, all right? We're not going to get into nutrition too much. So there was a taste test conducted by Outdoor Life from 10 blindfolded tasters.
Mm.
10 people. That's it. Not a big sample. Author, let's see. Oh, the author in this study was raised on venison, prefers to eat beef. Compared similar cuts, meat was evenly seasoned and charcoal grilled to medium rare. Meat was cut into bite-sized portions. Coincidentally, in this study, the deer was a buck from the Casco Mountains. How about that?
Oh, nice.
The ribeye steak was from Good Butcher, which I guess is some guy in Brooklyn. And the taste winner was venison, so who knows, right? Venison reported a richer flavor, not gamey. Beef reported more tender, fattier, succulent, and versatile. Yeah, I agree with that. You know, beef is just an easier meat to cook, I think. You can go from venison, if you're not paying attention, you can screw it up in a heartbeat.
And I think this is where venison gets a bad rap. I mean, like you just said, it's so easy to screw up.
Yeah.
And I think that's a lot of people's first impression of it. Someone screwed it up, and now they don't like it. They're never going to eat it again.
No doubt. Yeah. I mean, it goes from just, you know, from tasting so good to a piece of leather so fast because there's no fat, right? There's no fat to moderate things.
Yeah, or it gets seasoned to death.
Yeah, then you may as well just eat anything. If you wrap in bacon stuff, well, I mean, yeah, it's going to be good. It's bacon.
Yeah.
Who doesn't like bacon?
I don't know. I know a guy, he had me try this, and it was okay, but it's like, oh, yeah, I marinated it in this, and then after 2 days, I marinated it in this, and then while I was grilling, I seasoned it in that, and I'm like, yeah, all you can taste is the seasoning.
I fry it in butter in a cast iron skillet. That's my favorite way to eat venison.
Oh, yeah.
That's it. That's simple. I don't even like it on the grill. I like it just on...
We've been...
Yeah,
mostly just sear it too. We don't even get to medium rare anymore. It's rare or very rare.
Yeah, I notice if it's too rare though, for me, it doesn't bring out the flavors in my opinion.
That's where I'm at. Julia likes it a little rarer than I do. And
yeah,
The cooking
brings out, I think, some of the flavor. You know.
But I've definitely gotten rarer as in time.
Yeah.
There's a sweet spot, I think.
Yep, absolutely. So, cost. Well, this cost thing is like, this is kind of surprising to a lot of people, actually, I think.
Yeah.
But people, hunters don't account for all their costs. Now, there's a lot of ways, different ways to kill a deer. The cheapest way is buying your house.
Yep.
Then you're in the money. But, okay, so let's compare. Beef, price per pound of beef has soared, but still cheaper than venison. Due in part to drought out west. Well, this is a long time ago. Anyway, beef could turn into the next lobster. Hopefully not. But the USDA data says that a steak and sirloin is about $7.08 a pound. I don't know what it is today. I'll be honest, this data is a few years old. Ground chuck is about $3.40 a pound. So, venison. It can be a lot. The average cost of a hunting license fee back 5 years ago was about $21. New York State, $29 in New York State. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service data says that the average hunter spends about $885 on trips and gear for hunting. 50% of hunters kill about one deer per year, so that's a half a deer per year. An average hunter gets about 60 pounds of venison from one deer. Not here, man.
No.
No way.
Not in the Catskill Mountains.
Yeah. If a hunter kills one deer, then the cost would be about $1,770 per animal, or $29.50 a pound. Damn.
Or higher, man. I see people driving in on 28 that are clearly going hunting. They've got the big fancy truck with the big fancy UTV, and then they've got the big fancy trailer that they bought to haul that UTV.
My Polaris Gator.
Oh, they got the big Yeti cooler on the back, and I'm not saying there's anything wrong with it. I'm just saying that's an expensive deer now.
Can be the same with firewood, too.
It can be, yeah. The guy that bought the $30,000 tractor because it had the bucket so he can move that wood.
Yeah, you saving anything? I guess the one good thing is, you know, you're getting a workout. That's good.
No, you know, maybe not with the bucket.
You got nothing.
And the wood splitter.
Right, yeah, exactly. You got nothing if you don't have your health, I guess. But, yeah, you can spend it. Yeah, same thing with firewood. But $29.50. All right. But, hey, I mean, people, I think, write it off because it's recreation, and they would be doing other recreational things.
Yeah, and their hobbies, you know. Yeah. I think everyone has a hobby that costs them money. That's why it's a hobby and not a business, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So go significantly down the price if you get more than one deer and if you, quote-unquote, shop locally. John.
Right. Not driving to Kansas.
Kansas.
Paying 10 grand for a guided hunt on that big buck.
Yeah. Right. So this is my own data myself. First, I get on average about 25 pounds of meat per deer. Listen, I don't know. I weighed how much it is. It doesn't come out to as much as other people. Like I said, the deer where I hunt are getting smaller. It's not 60 pounds for me. Back then I used to get 3 animals. Now it's 2. I spend about $200, if that, I would say, per deer hunting season. So I'm spending less than $5.33 a pound. In that case, is less than beef. But the cost winner overall, I would say for most people, is going to be beef. So, I don't know.
I agree.
Food safe. Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say, I mean, does that cost factor in the cost of that bow? I mean, I know you bought it.
Uh-oh.
10 years ago, but it was expensive 10 years ago. Now you got to amortize that over all these 10 years.
Oh, amortize.
Or
yes,
whatever,
sir.
Whatever the term
no,
is.
No, you're right. I got that for half price because some other knucklehead wanted to upgrade his bow to some crazy thing.
Yep, that happens.
And so, yeah. No, it doesn't. No, if you count that, geez. But, yeah, that was a long time ago, though, now. That was 12. That may have been 14 years ago now.
Hmm.
So that bow's paid itself.
And that's how you can write it off, you know, yeah. Write it off. It's like, my hobby? It gives me enjoyment.
It may have been $250 I spent on it.
Oh, you
I paid half price on
so
that
you got
bow.
A smoking deal even then.
Oh, yeah.
Definitely.
The guy wanted to get rid of it. And I love that bow because it's so compact, PSE. Yeah. That's why I can't get a crossbow. I don't know. They're great, you know, but get less time to hunt.
Yeah, I was talking to Julia the other day, and just we mentioned – we're just thinking, how much money would we have if we didn't hunt, if we both didn't hunt and fish?
Yeah.
I was just in, like, all the gasoline we could have back driving to hunting spots.
Yeah, and you invested in the stock market, you probably have 50,000 already.
That's what I said. I said 100,000 because of both of us. But, yeah, if it was invested money that wasn't spent, I bet we'd be 100 grand in ahead. The pickup trucks,
You'd have a pickup.
I would have a pickup, but I would argue that she wouldn't need a pickup.
Oh, absolutely. You don't need two
she
pickups.
She can get away.
You
we both, but we do have two pickup trucks.
Yeah, you do. Yeah. I know. I mean, hey, you know, a lot of people spend money on different things. Some people spend money on the gym.
Right.
Some people spend money going to Burning Man.
Burning Man?
It's a concert down there. I don't know. Bonnaroo. Right? That's a cost a lot of money. Some people take 1 to 2 weeks off to go to Bonnaroo or whatever.
My roommates wanted some spring break to go to this laser light show concert stupid thing in, I want to say it was Italy. Different country.
Oh, that's just, yeah.
Yeah.
Man, that's a lot of money. And nothing to show.
Instead they compromised and drove to North Carolina to go kayaking.
And that's a lot.
That was a lot.
Yeah.
I stayed at the college house and watched the dog.
Yeah. I mean, whatever floats your boat, you know. But, you know, obviously we hunt more for more than just economical reasons. It's also fulfilling. You know, it's that word fulfilling that is, I think, still important. Get you out in the woods.
Yeah, we've had shows on why hunt.
To me, it actually, to be honest, pays off for work because it gets me out in the woods thinking about forest things that I should be thinking about anyway.
Right.
So that's different than I think other people.
I have a lot of pictures in my phone that I've been taking on hunting excursions that I use for work.
Absolutely.
And it's just, it helps me convey things and show things and talk about things. That bobcat, never would have seen that bobcat if I wasn't hunting.
No, there's no doubt, you know. So there's things you notice when you're out in the woods. Some people do yoga. I don't do yoga. You know, you go up in a tree stand. I do my own yoga.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, you need some time for yourself, and hunting serves that purpose for me.
Yeah, to be all alone.
Yeah. And I don't know. I mean, I used to be against it when I was younger, but getting a trophy buck and mounting it and putting it in the house actually does serve a purpose because I can't tell you how many deer I've forgotten how I got them. But the two that are on the wall, I can tell you exactly about that day.
Exactly.
And you know, I think that's important.
Yeah.
It's more important than a photograph.
For sure. Know?
Yeah, and how would throwing out the hide be better than mounting a deer? Than, you know, preserving it.
Right.
Right? I mean, you killed the deer. Deer's dead. So throwing out the hide is better than having it as a trophy in your above your wood stove?
Right.
I don't see that. No. I mean, people have souvenirs of everything, you know. So I think that's a good way to think about it. But, yeah, I will never forget the day that I got either of those deer, you know.
Yeah. And you're reminded to think about it again anytime someone comes over and asks about them.
Absolutely. I mean, I remember what that morning was like. I remember I was falling asleep in my tree stand when I got that 10-pointer, literally just falling asleep, and I heard across the little stream the pounding of hooves on the ground. I was like, what the hell is that? That's it. That's a good sound. That's a sound you never want to forget.
Yeah.
You know? You can't, right? What's the best sound? When you get up your tree stand, or if you're walking in the woods quietly, and you hear deer coming towards you in the woods.
Oh, yeah. No,
it doesn't get better than that.
For sure. No, and you got me thinking about all the different deer that I've got in the house, too.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. You know? I mean, I don't have a cell phone. I guess I could toggle. If I did, I would toggle through my photos.
No, I could tell you from firsthand. I took a picture of every deer I've ever shot, and I've had four cell phones in my life. So, three of them have those pictures on them. I couldn't even tell you if that cell phone, it probably wouldn't even turn on if I plugged it in.
You lose them.
Yeah, they're gone.
They're gone. You take so many photos, I would imagine, that it's just, you're not going to look at them
again. They're lost. But, yeah, I have those antlers.
You have the antlers, exactly.
They're in my garage.
Yep. And if you mounted something that one last year that you did on the wood there with the tap holes and everything.
Yeah.
I'll never forget that deer. That was a cool hunt, man. That was a really cool hunt. But anyway, that's all the time we got on From the Forest. And if you missed the show, it was Venison From the Forest to the Table. Up next is Emergency Classical. there's no one on after us, so it's going to be some classical music for you. But we'll see you next week.
All right. Good night, everyone.
All right. Good night.
Oh, the neon lights were flashing and the icy wind did blow. The water seeped into his shoes and the drizzle turned to snow. His eyes were red, his hopes were dead, and the wine was running low. And the old man came home from the forest. His tears fell on the sidewalk as he stumbled in the street. A dozen faces stopped to stare, but no one stopped to speak.